Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. New York Times bestselling author Larry Tye is back with us today. We're real excited to welcome Larry back. I was just saying to him before we went on here, it's actually been a little over 6 years since the last time he was on our program. We're going to talk to him not only about his new book, Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon, but also what it's been like for him to not only being able to kind of pull the veil back on this individual that so many people think they know, and to be able to share things that maybe we did not know about Bobby Kennedy and how he became the man that he was at the time of his death. If you're just now hearing about the book, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But Larry, hello to you, and welcome back to the program.
Great to be back with you, Cyrus.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. I was first introduced to Larry's work, as I said, a little over 6 years ago. We were talking about, at the time, his book, Satchel, The Life and Times of an American Legend, of course, talking about Satchel Paige. I had mentioned to Larry at that point, that was my first time ever actually reading about Satchel Paige. And for many people, I know it was the same thing. You know, it's so interesting. I want to talk about that for just a moment, Larry, because when I was prepping for your segment and when I was finishing up Bobby Kennedy myself, I went over to Amazon to kind of do some prep work there. And it's interesting that people are still writing reviews some 6 years later for that book, Satchel, and talking about how it has resonated with them. What has it been like for you to see that something so powerful that you wrote now, you know, almost 6-7 years ago, is still resonating with people, Larry?
So I think that Satchel Paige's story is a perfect lens into the Jim Crow era in America. And I think the story in race in America, as we all know, continues to be the story of America. So I think it's a tribute to Satchel. It's a tribute to people's interest in the story of race, and I love to see that that using his life as a lens into that is something that at least still resonates with some people.
Right. This book just released this month, Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon, already a bestseller on Amazon.com. And, you know, I think the thing that really struck me when I went into this book, I always try to, especially when I'm reading something that is nonfiction, Larry, I always try to forget about what I think I may already know about the subject and then just go into it with an open mind and thought and then be able just to take in the information. What was so interesting about this book was I realized how much I did not know about Bobby Kennedy, and you were able to find out from individuals who knew him quite well about him, including, of course, his widow as well. What was it like for you to have that type of access, Larry, to be able to talk to these individuals who were not only there shoulder to shoulder with him, but were able to give you the side of him that many people didn't know?
Sure. So I think that it was not that I'm some charismatic figure that convinced these people like Ethel Kennedy, who hadn't talked before, to talk. It is, I think, more that they're aging. Ethel Kennedy turned 88 this year, and I think a lot of people look around and say, geez, if I'm ever going to talk, it's got to be now, and I was the guy who showed up on their doorstep at that moment. And so I interviewed more than 400 people, and just to sort of zero in on Ethel for a second, what she did was gave me a chance to test out every theory I ever had about Bobby Kennedy. Was he, in fact, as close as I thought he was to Joe McCarthy? And she confirmed that he was, that Joe McCarthy may have been a monster to much of America back in the 1950s when he was doing his witch hunts for communists. But to Bobby Kennedy, he was one of the only guys who Bobby thought was taking seriously a threat that Bobby thought as a cold warrior that communists were posing to America. And so I could test out something like that I wanted to be sure before I wrote about it that it was really true and that it was the inside story what was going on with Bobby, and there was nobody who understood him better personally and politically than his wife, Ethel, and 50 years later, thankfully, she's still around to tell those stories. And I would say of the 400 people that I talked to, probably a quarter to a third of them have died in the interim. So whether I did a good job or a bad job with them, it's the last chance we'll get to hear from people ranging from George McGovern to Nick Katzenbach, who succeeded Bobby as Attorney General, to Tony Lewis, the New York Times columnist who had covered him for so many years.
Yeah. And this was something that was personal for you as well, Larry, that we find out in this particular book. You talk about that you had been captivated by Bobby, even going back to high school. And you even say something else that was really interesting, and this, again, is one of those things that the reason why your books, I think, resonate with people, because you're able to kind of reach us all where we are. You say in the book about him and the influence that he had. In the history of America, you write, there have been two non-presidents with whom our relationship was so intimate that we recognize them by their initials. One, of course, was MLK, Martin Luther King. The other one was RFK, that being, of course, Bobby Kennedy. What was it about him, do you think, that made him such an influence and such a force in people's lives?
So I think that it was partly the reflected influence of his brother, the president, and Bobby was the younger brother. He was the attorney general. But I think it was something more than that. It was more than the Kennedy name. It was the sense that this guy, even more than his brother, seemed like a passionate, provocative, interesting character, that there was something, whether it was during the Cuban Missile Crisis when everybody knew that he was the one at Jack Kennedy's right hand, whether it was during the Civil Rights era when he was the one who was giving the federal response to the riots in Montgomery and Birmingham, to the crazy reaction and the racist reaction on the Ole Miss campus, the University of Mississippi, when they tried to integrate that. It was Bobby Kennedy. He was a little bit like Woody Allen's Zelig character, showing up at every moment that mattered in the history of the 1950s through his death in 1968. And I think that he just touched something in us. He was the tough liberal, or, depending on your perspective, the tender conservative that we all have been yearning for the last 50 years.
Yeah. I think, again, the thing that you're able to do, as you did with Satchel as well, Larry, is to be able to make the individual human. I think so many times when we hear of someone who is high profile or someone that, you know, is known by so many, it is hard to sometimes be able to understand them on a human level, on a level where we can relate to them. You have been able to, I think, to make him relatable. And again, I think, as you were saying, in part because of the access that you had to those who knew him. I want to talk about Broadley for a moment. I mentioned, you know, you're being interested in him even going back to high school. You know, have you always known, Larry, that your gift, if you want to call it that, I would call it your gift. You may disagree with me, but your gift has been to be able to make people personable. Have you always found that has been your gift in writing?
So I think that's really nice of you to say it, and I wouldn't contradict you, but what I would say is my passion has always been, I was a journalist for 25 years, for much of that at the Boston Globe, and my passion has always been to try to take a story that I think is important and put it in simple terms that people can relate to it. And I think that I tried to use Bobby Kennedy's life as a lens to try to understand not just how he changed over the course of his 20-year career, but about how his changes reflected the profound changes in America from the conservative 1950s and the era of Eisenhower to the tumultuous 1960s. Bobby Kennedy was a harbinger of the best of how America was changing in that time. He went from a cold warrior to a hot-blooded liberal. America was being transformed from a place that was looking for a communist under every bed to looking for ways that we could change and try to reform what we were doing. And I think had he lived, you know, we can all debate what would have happened in 1968 had he not been shot, but I think what would have happened is he was killed the night of the California presidential primary. The next day, Richard Daley, the mayor of Chicago then's, children tell me that the next day their dad was planning to endorse Bobby Kennedy when he came to Chicago. And I think there would have been a groundswell. Richard Daley was a very powerful establishment figure. If he did it, other big city and other establishment Democrats would have done it. And I think Bobby Kennedy would have gotten the nomination. And if it was anybody in America who knew Richard Nixon's vulnerabilities, it was the guy who had run the successful campaign for his brother against Nixon 8 years before. I think Bobby Kennedy would have been our president, and America would have been a very different place than it turned out to be under Richard Nixon.
Yeah, and you outline that in the book in an interesting way, Larry. I think the other thing about that is that there was a metamorphosis or a change or a shift that took place with Bobby Kennedy throughout his life. And I think, you know, a lot of that, I think, goes with, you know, as events in our lives change, things happen that shape us. There were labels that he had to fight, as a lot of people do as they're making the change from one profession to another. You talk about in the book, I think the chapter is about justice, getting justice, about, you know, the concerns of what would he do when it came to the law, you know, versus politics. Do you think that it was those type of things that even when his brother, when John F. Kennedy may have wished for something different, do you think that was when he really did kind of come into his own, being able to show that he could be able to not only do what he felt like was right, but also to be his own man?
I think that's absolutely what happened, that in issue after issue, as he did with civil rights, Bobby grew, he learned, and he pushed his brother to do the right thing. John Kennedy was a very smart guy, but he was a much more cautious guy than Bobby. And in something like civil rights, he would never have proposed the civil rights bill that he did had it not been for Bobby. Bobby was the only one of his advisors who told him to do that. And that was, I think that Bobby was, in many ways, in addition to being Jack Kennedy's alter ego, he was his conscience. And he pushed him to do things that John may have known were right, but in fact that he would have been too cautious to do, and his political advisors would have been too cautious to do. And I think that would have, had they both lived long enough, that would have shown itself in a detente with Cuba and Russia. I think Bobby got a sense that we had to move more quickly in reforming our institutions and in being a beacon to the world that Jack Kennedy had dreamed about helping make America become.
Yeah. And I think that is what people will definitely take away from this book, just one of the elements of it. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're so excited to welcome back to our program today Larry Tighe. He is the author of the new book, already a bestseller, Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon. I think the thing about this book as well, Larry, as we're talking about Bobby Kennedy and his role, you mentioned the civil rights movement. One of the things that you address in the book is the March on Washington. I mentioned this to you before we went on here, because this is something that, again, I did not know before writing the book, is that there were some concerns, you know, as there were individuals who were genuinely trying to bring about change, something that is reminiscent of what we see sometimes today, which makes this, I think, even more timely a book. There were concerns with the White House and with the Kennedys that the communists would be able to come in and to be able to take over this cause and to kind of turn it into something other than what those who were coming to Washington meant. What was it like for you to explore and to think about the unique parallels of today? Because there are some who have those same concerns. As we recently saw, individuals may come together for one reason and someone else with their own agenda comes in and really kind of disrupts things. What was it like for you to kind of look into that?
So I felt a responsibility to, on the one hand, explore those kinds of concerns as if they were legitimate. Was there really a reason to think the communists might come in? And I wanted to be fair, not looking back with it with my take on it 50 years later, but understand, was J. Edgar Hoover, was the FBI, did they have real reason to be concerned? And the fact is that Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement did have some people who had a left tilt back then, were his top advisors. On the other hand, the idea that they were communists and that they were undermining the movement, I think, was an invention of the paranoia that J. Edgar Hoover had. And I think that as Bobby found out, every time he would really look deeply into those kinds of expressions of concern and the tips that Hoover was getting and the warnings that he was passing on, that they were overblown, that Martin Luther King was smart enough to have control over his advisors rather than them having control over him. They were not dyed-in-the-wool communists. Lots of people were legitimately leftist back then and sympathetic to a lot of the things that the general communist movement was saying. And I think that Bobby Kennedy was, on the one hand, trying to protect his brother's flank, to ensure that nothing would happen with the Kennedy administration's allies in the civil rights movement that would embarrass the Kennedys so that they wouldn't be able to promote effectively a civil rights bill, and that was a legitimate concern. But I think they took too seriously J. Edgar Hoover's warnings. I think that they made a mistake, and Bobby thought he made a mistake later, in agreeing to to wiretap Martin Luther King's phones and the phones of his key advisors. And looking back with our perspective now, we can see what was right and what was wrong in terms of those warnings. And I think that trying to sift through them was fun, it was interesting, and it was a big responsibility because people trust when you write a biography of somebody that you're going to get it right.
Right. Exactly. You know, that is always the thing because, of course, as we know, you're not going to please everyone. I mean, and you know that, of course, as you go into every book that you do, Larry. But, you know, and especially with the subject's last name is Kennedy, I think there is going to be an intense amount of interest, to say the least, in what is written. What was it like for you as you did, as you just talked about that one situation that was referenced in the book, what was it like for you to have that balance and to then at the end of the day know that your main thing was to do, as we discussed at the beginning, to make sure that you got it right?
Right. So it is an enormous responsibility. Lots of people have written things about the Kennedys over the years that were rumor, that were gossip, that were innuendo, and have sort of gotten away with it, and those kinds of things get repeated often enough that people think they're factual. So I felt the responsibility to try to sift through that and do my own research and as little as possible trust things just because they had been written before. And in the end, you trust a couple things. One is you document and footnote. We had pages and pages of bibliography and footnote, and every factual thing that I said or things that I was suggesting were fact, I tried to footnote so that other people could come by afterwards and double-check whether I got it right. I have my tape recordings of my 400 interviewees that I'm going to be donating to Columbia University's library where people can listen to those and say, did I get it right, and did those people know enough to tell me something that was fact-based? So I don't pretend to say that everything I have in my book is the final word, but I also do take seriously as a lifelong journalist getting right what I say and having some basis to say it. And that was the fun thing. It's a responsibility, and if you didn't have fun with it, there's no point in doing a book like this. And so I tried to make a story that was both readable and that was resonant still 50 years later after somebody like Bobby Kennedy died, but also that was factual.
Yeah. You talk about even as, of course, he went throughout his journey, you say in the book, Bobby, a legitimate cultural icon, rarely went unnoticed. He was half James Cagney, half James Dean. Only this tough guy rebel had more causes than anybody else. While liberals remained as suspicious of him as he was of them, the War on Poverty pioneer Daniel Patrick Monahan offered this reassurance: Kennedy has worked for his liberalism. It's not something he's learned at the Bronx High School of Science. The things he learned first were conservative things. The things he learned second were liberal things. He is an idealist without illusions. You might want to call this higher liberalism. What do you think? I mean, I could not help as I was reading this chapter, and the chapter is Senator Kennedy, Larry, and I'm sure someone else probably mentioned this to you before I asked you this question. What do you think, because, I mean, the title of liberal or the description of being liberal is something that has definitely, I think, evolved. Do you think that he would be seen the same way today in today's political climate?
I think he'd be seen as a pioneer and a prophet today. I think that more than any figure I can think of from as long ago as a half a century, Bobby Kennedy's message still resonates. His message on race we see today. I think that he gave a speech on the day after Martin Luther King's assassination about the importance of America not letting itself be defined by snipers who are killing people. He gave a speech that seems prescient in terms of what happened in the last week in Dallas, in Baton Rouge, outside of St. Paul. He was talking about precisely these issues. He said 50 years ago that in fewer than 50 years we would have an African-American president. Nobody 50 years ago was saying that. No politician, it was unsafe for a Democratic politician to say that because so much of the Democratic base was in the segregated South. It's just, he was saying things that suggest that he was a man ahead of his time, that he was a man who learned and grew. Today we would call the kind of transformation he made flip-flopping. I think it was heartfelt. I think he often did it against the political winds rather than blowing with them. And I think that it gives a good name to the idea that a politician can learn and grow and change.
Yeah. When you mentioned about what he said about that, I thought about what you wrote in the epilogue and what then-Senator Barack Obama said, who was seven at the time of Bobby's death. The interesting quote that, and I, again, this was all new to me as well. I did not remember this. But talking about Bobby Kennedy, then-Senator Obama said that he calls us to make gentle the life of a world that's too often coarse and unforgiving. And I think that that is a powerful thing to be able to say about someone, and what a great legacy for sure. So what was your hope when you finished this book and all the intensive research and the conversations that you had, Larry, and being able to bring this book to life? What was your hope that people would take away from Bobby Kennedy, the making of a liberal icon?
So I want to just, before I answer that question, I want to just say one thing, which is, it's very nice. I do a lot of interviews, and it's very nice to have an interviewer who read the book as carefully as you did and is as thoughtful in the questions. So what I took away, what I wanted people to take away was a sense that, first of all, among the Kennedys, Jack Kennedy because he was president, Ted Kennedy because he was a senator for 50 years and the liberal lion in the Senate, they tend to get the attention of the public, of authors, of the press in terms of the Kennedy family. And I wanted to say in this book that Bobby Kennedy may have been the most interesting of the Kennedy brothers, and he's somebody we ought to refocus attention on. He was the one out there pushing his brother Jack to do the right thing. He was the one who was the role model for his brother Ted, for the kind of senator Ted wanted to become and finally did become, and that Bobby Kennedy is still, I think, exactly that politician who lots of Americans yearn for. He was somebody who was putting together a coalition that has never been assembled and that I would love to see us fighting to assemble today, of blacks, of Hispanics, of blue-collar whites, of Native Americans. He was taking the dispossessed. He was taking young and old. He was building bridges in a way that in today's world where politicians, unnamed politicians are out there creating divisions among us to try to respond to the turmoil in America, Bobby Kennedy was appealing to our best instincts. And that, to me, is a message and a figure that we ought to pay attention to because he offers lessons that half a century later are still really, really important.
Yeah, sure. And it definitely comes through as I was reading the book again. As I said in the beginning of the conversation, Larry, I definitely try to read books like this with an open mind. And I come across with that very sentiment. I think that is the interesting thing. And I think it also goes to a larger point that we have to be very careful about just because we hear a name and we think we know who someone is. Until you've gotten to actually be able to spend some time with them, as we are able to do in this book, thanks to the intimate conversations you were able to have, I think then we can then make a better assessment of who an individual is and also their impact, and as you just described, their legacy as well. Again, everyone, Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon is the new book by New York Times bestselling author Larry Tighe. Larry, it is always a pleasure. I was so excited when Miguel Leander, Public Relations, told me I was going to be able to speak with you again, so congratulations again on the book, and it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime.
I appreciate that, and I'd love to come back for the next one, and thanks again, Cyrus.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. Thank you for that and the great compliments as well. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Larry Tighe, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media site. So head over to facebook.com/CyrusWeb or tune in, of course, through our friends at Twitter, twitter.com/CyrusWeb. I've already tagged Larry there on Twitter. You can stay connected with him there. You can click on that link, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You will make it a great one.